Today, the Arizona Department of Health Services has recorded another 2,339 cases of COVID-19, bringing the total number of cases to more than 168,000. 46 additional deaths have been reported. To date, 3,454 Arizonans have died from COVID-related illness. The Quality of Life Medical and Research Center in Tucson is recruiting Arizonans to participate in a COVID-19 vaccine trial. The facility is one of 87 across the country chosen by the FDA to carry out phase 3 of the trials, led by biotech from Moderna. The first stages of the trials have demonstrated success up to this point. The vaccine binds itself to the COVID virus and is administered in 2 doses 29 days apart. The trial is expected to last up to 2 years, with the research hopefully contributing to a vaccine much sooner.
School districts across Arizona are waiting on the state to release the metrics they should use when making decisions about when to reopen for in-person classes. Those are expected by the end of next week. In the meantime, though, educators are generally planning to at least start the year remotely. And the group Stand for Children has released a set of guidelines to make sure students are motivated and engaged, and that this upcoming school year does not turn into a lost school year. Those recommendations include fair grading practices, an advisor for every middle and high school student, and starting the year with a virtual home visit between teachers and their students. Rebecca Gao is executive director of Stand for Children Arizona, and she joins me to talk more about this. And Rebecca, how concerned are folks in the education world that this upcoming school year might in fact be considered a lost year?
I think it is a very strong concern. When the crisis first started in March and school shut down, we immediately started calling parents in Arizona, and we heard loud and clear across the nation, but I very much heard it in Arizona with hundreds of parents, and particularly low-income parents with the most vulnerable of students. They are really, really concerned about their kids' safety first. And then secondly, they're very concerned about their kids falling behind.
So one of the categories that you talk about is motivating and supporting students. And it seems as though there are a couple of different metrics in there, different issues in there that are kind of similar, which is you say that school needs to matter in terms of making sure kids know that they can't just slough off and, you know, turn their camera off on a Zoom or something and not show up. But at the same time, grading has to account for the fact that some amount of learning will happen from home. What to you is the best way to make sure that students know that what they're doing is important, but also making sure that they're not held responsible, for example, if their internet goes out, or if they don't have the greatest device to log on, or if they're just not learning quite the way that they would if they were in the classroom?
Right. So I think there's a difference between the specific policy and the expectation, and having a state of grace around how stressful this is for everybody. There are some pretty intense considerations where, imagine a younger student, a middle school or a high school student, who has this opportunity to take something as a pass-fail, not understanding the consequences of it not being in your GPA, or, you know, if you do fail, and it completely changes the psychology of learning. If basically you can get a D and get the same thing as if you got an A, right? Like the psychology behind that is not conducive to high academic achievement. So we recommend not allowing policies like that. At the same time, if we're going to have policies that are real, continuing with real grades and continuing with real attendance, we can still have a state of grace and understanding for the child and the student. We can still have flexibility around sort of the grading policy itself. So there's a difference there, I think, between having policies that continue kids' engagement in their learning versus making sure that we have a state of flexibility that actually draws them in instead of pushes them out in maybe a technology situation.
I want to ask you about one of the other aspects that you talk about, which is partnerships with families. And you hear from teachers all the time about how it's really important that students have their families' input, and that, you know, the school and the teacher has, you know, families, you know, the families interested and involved in their students' education. How much more important is that now with students, by and large, at least starting the year, learning from home? And what role do schools have in trying to foster that kind of relationship, maybe more now than they have in the past?
Yeah, I think that is one of the really important elements that people are aware of, but they might not be aware enough at this point. So I think it is really important that we create a space and that districts and schools create a space for the conversation about their own parent community. But there needs to be a very specific feedback and engagement plan to learn from parents what kind of technology they have, what their fears and concerns are, and start with that and build that relationship around the situation, I think, right away. And very quickly on the heels of that, start talking about what academic achievement looks like and listening to parents about their fears about their kids falling behind.
I want to go back to something that we talked about early on about the idea of making sure that students know that this year matters while also, you know, understanding that this is a different type of school year. Do you think that we need to be changing our expectations for what students are going to learn this year and how much they're going to learn and just sort of overall how the school year is going to go this year relative to a quote unquote typical year?
That is the $64,000 question right now. I don't think anybody can honestly expect the full year academic growth that we would normally expect. However, I hesitate to say it's okay. Ultimately, we don't want a 12th grade student to have an 11th grade education when they exit, right? It's not going to be okay at the end of a kid's career to have truly lost a year academically. But at the same time, we do have to have, I think, a state of flexibility and understanding this year that it's going to be a very different trajectory for kids. Every school and district very likely is going to have a different experience. And so we're going to have to, I think, employ what we already know about how to identify gaps in a child's education and how to remediate those gaps. We know how to do that. So we're just going to have to make sure that we continue using these things that we know, but maybe it's on a slightly different time scale than a typical academic year.
All right. That is Rebecca Gao, Executive Director of Stanford Children, Arizona. Rebecca, as always, nice to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mark. My pleasure.